This is Digital Story Podcast number 593, July 18th, 2017. Today's theme is Just One Print. I'm Derek Story. Sometimes we make things too big, and as such, we shy away from them. I was actually thinking about this as it relates to making prints from our digital images. The idea of printing and all that goes with it seems like so much work. But what if you said to yourself, I'm going to make just one print? That doesn't seem so bad, does it? We'll explore this approach on today's TDS podcast. You probably didn't know that for a while, I smoked cigarettes. I was in a rock and roll band called Section 8. I was in my 20s, and it was the golden era of small nightclubs in Southern California. After our sound check, but before the gig actually started, we had a lot of time on our hands. And that's when I learned to smoke. Well, as you may have guessed, after a while the charm wore off. And when it was time to quit cigarettes, I found that it was much more difficult than starting. Fortunately, my path crossed with someone who could help me. He was teaching smoking cessation for the public health department. One of the things that he used to say is that when the urge would strike, just say that I'm not going to do anything for the moment. Not forever, not even for tomorrow, just right now. Just right now, I'm not going to do anything. And soon the urge would pass. There was something too big about the idea of saying I'm not a smoker anymore or that I've quit cigarettes forever. You say stuff like that and your psyche just really wants to rebel against it and just go, oh yeah, you can't tell me that. But if you just say, you know what, I'm not going to do this right now. Just at this moment, I'm not going to do it. Somehow the psyche's okay with that. And then another moment passes, and another moment passes. And then suddenly a whole day has gone by, and you haven't done anything. It's kind of cool. I also learned that this technique works in the opposite direction as well. And when we're using it the opposite way, I call breaking it down into parts. So let's just say that you're facing this gigantic big task. And you go, oh my gosh, this is so overwhelming, you know, and your mind is just boggled and you become paralyzed, right? You get paralyzed. The thing is so big that you can't do anything. Well, in that case, then you say, well, I'm just going to do one thing right now. What is just one thing that I could do right now that's related to this ginormous thing that's overwhelming me? So you do that one thing, and then you go, okay, I've done that one thing. Now, what else can I do? And then what else can I do? You're breaking it down into parts, and then you're knocking them off one by one. And then, you know, one day you look up, and the whole thing's completed. You've finished it. So you may wonder, why are you bringing all this stuff up, as you often do with me, I'm sure. And there is actually a reason, as there always is. And I think printing is a little bit like that for some folks. Because, you know, you think about printing and you go, okay, well, first of all, I have to get the printer fired up. And then I've got to pick the paper or find the paper. I don't know where the paper is. Where is the paper anyway? And then I have to make sure that there's ink in the printer, but there probably is because I haven't printed hardly at all. So there should be ink in there. And then I've got to, you know, set it up on the computer and, you know, make all of that work. And then once the print comes out, what am I going to do with it? I guess I should get a mat for it or maybe put it in a frame or something like that. And it, you know, and then, you know, all these things start to pile up and you go, you know, I'm not really the printing type. I'm just going to stick with Instagram if that's okay with you. So, you know, I was thinking about this because I decided to test this idea that I had where, what if I just took one image, right? Because, you know, part of this being overwhelmed is, okay, what am I going to print, right? I mean, am I going to print this? I'm going to print that. You know, you go into your catalog and you look at all your favorites or you look at all your four stars and you go, well, I don't know. Should I print these six? Should I print these eight? What if you just picked one? What if you just picked one image? Just say one image. You know what? I kind of like this image. It doesn't have to be your best image. It's probably not your worst image. Just an image. Just go, you know what? I think this will make a good print. Just pick the one print. And then decide, okay, how big am I going to print it? Well, I'll tell you right now, if you have a 13-inch printer, print it 13 by 19. Get some 13 by 19 paper and put it on that. And the reason why I say that is because I do all my proof printing for my clients, and even when I'm designing stuff, I do that on 8.5 by 11. And by the way, I do proof print images before I deliver them to clients, because they look very different when I make a print than when I'm looking at them on the computer. And I really discover a lot of stuff about the images, especially with tone and color, that I just sort of glossed over when I was looking at a computer screen. And when I make a print of an image, and then I fine-tune it from that, and then I deliver it to the client, now I'm feeling very confident about what I'm giving to the client. I digress. So going back to the size of prints. So I do all that proofing on 8.5 by 11 because it doesn't use up as much ink. It prints faster, you know, all that kind of stuff. The paper costs less. So I have a lot of 8.5 by 11s around the studio here. Now the difference between an 8.5 by 11 image and a 13 by 19 image is a lot. Is a lot in terms of impact, in terms of looking like art, in terms of all sorts of stuff. The difference is ginormous. It's ginormous. So I'm going to tell you right now, because what we're trying to do is really keep this simple, right? Is print 13 by 19. If you got a 13 by 19 printer, print 13 by 19. Okay, go for it. Get some paper. One of the papers that I really recommend that I think is just a good all-around paper is Red River's Arctic Polar Luster. It's good for all sorts of images. And if you only had one box of 13 by 19 paper around the house or around the studio, go with Arctic Polar. It's great paper. It's great. You can print anything on it. Okay. All right. So now you have that. Now the whole thing that you have read about, you know, ICC profiles and all this, and you've heard me talk about this before. If you have a modern printer, if you have a printer, an Epson or a Canon, especially a 13-inch printer, right, that can do 13 by 19, and if it's only a few years old, then just let the printer manage the colors. Just let the printer, I'm going to say this again, just let the printer manage the colors. I don't know, you know, when people write or when I see posts online or whatever and they go, you know, the color was horrible when I let the printer do it. I don't know what they're doing. I honestly don't know what they're doing. I have tested letting the printer manage the color with both Epson and Canon printers, and then I compare it to what's on the screen, and it looks great. And I know I'm not colorblind. I know I have a good sense of color and design. So I don't know what's happening there. And you have a good image, it'll look good. And the only thing that you will have to do is probably make it look a little bit lighter, adjust the tonality of it. Because when we're looking at things on a backlit screen versus reflective art, it seems to look a little darker on reflected art. So chances are your first print, if you don't do any correction, now I kind of know what to do because I do print. But if you haven't printed a lot, which we're assuming you haven't, then your first print's probably going to be a little dark and you just have to lighten it up a bit, okay? That's probably all you're going to have to do. All right, so now the print comes out. All right, now you have, let's say that on your second print, you get something that you really like and you're holding this wonderfully 13 inches by 19 inches sheet of paper with your image on it and you're going, wow, that actually does look pretty good. What do you do now? 13 by 19 is a standard size. It has become a standard for quite some time. So you can buy a frame that is 13 by 19 inches. And if you did nothing else, you could just let that image, I let it set overnight before I frame it, because there's something about the whole melding of the ink and the paper and all that. curing is what we call it usually. Let it sit overnight and then put it in the frame. Now, it's going to look pretty good. However, it looks even better if you get a mat for it. Now, there's a couple ways to go on this. And what I'm going to teach you in the next story is how to make your own mat, which is really fun. Now, you will need a second type of 13 by 19 inch paper for that. And that's where I have really thick mat surface paper from Red River that I use for art prints and that I also use for making my own mats. But we'll talk about that in a second. Put a mat on it, whether it's one that you buy or it's one that you make yourself. And you can just go down to the store. You can get the frame. You can do all that. You just go on Amazon. And really, it'll take you 15 minutes to find what you need. And it doesn't cost an arm and a leg. All right, now you have everything, right? So you have the print, you have a mat, you have frame. Put it all together and, make sure that there's, no dust or anything in there. Just, wipe it down with a lint-free cloth, the glass and everything. Put it together, find an open space on the wall and put it up and then look at it. You've just done something that is wonderful. You have made art. You have made a physical piece of art out of your own stuff. So you took the picture, you processed the picture, you printed the picture, and you framed the picture. Now, unless you go and cut down the tree and make your own frame, you really can't get any more hands-on than what you just did. That artwork is yours. And if you have nothing else for the rest of the year in terms of physical output from your photography work, you have this one print that's up on the wall right now. One print. And I tell you, that one print will make you happy. That one print will absolutely make you happy. Now, you're probably thinking, some of you out there going, Derek, I don't have a 13 by 19 inch printer. I can't make that big print. Then order the print online. That's okay. I don't think it's quite as good as printing it yourself, but it's darn good, right? So order the print. It won't cost you an arm and a leg. And then do everything else that I said. Either buy or make the mat, put it in a frame, and put it up on the wall. It's still your image. You still made a print. You still put it together, and it's still on the wall. You will love this one thing that you created. You will absolutely love it. Now, at this point, you may decide that you want to make more. You may not, but you will enjoy that one print. So that is what I'm talking about this week. Just one print, pick a shot, make the print, get it up on the wall, and then enjoy it. Trust me on this, you will feel so good when that thing is hanging on the wall. Making your own mats with ImageFramer. So I alluded in the previous segment about making your own mats, and I know this sounds totally weird, but actually I really like it. Here's the process. Well, let me tell you the idea first. The reason why I do that is because when I'm looking at an image and I'm thinking about putting a mat on it, I don't want to just put a black mat or a white mat on it most of the time. Usually I want some color or something to offset something in the image or, whatever. And I have found that when I'm playing around with the image in ImageFramer, that I can come up with those color schemes that I really like, which is really cool. And what I used to do with ImageFramer when I first got it was then I'd print the whole thing out, right? So you have the image, and then you have the mat that you created, and you print it all out, and you can put that in a frame, and it does look really good. It does look really good, and it's better than just having, the standard white space there. But then I started thinking, well, if this thing can make mats, why don't I print out just the mat without the image, cut the inside out, and then use that? And then I have something that's on a different stock of paper, so I have a different texture. You can see that the image is behind it. You have a little bit more of that traditional look. So here's what I did. So I start out the way that I normally work with ImageFramer, which is, you drop an image in there, you choose a mat, you start playing around with it, you get it looking the way that you want. Now, once I have that mat looking the way that I want with the image, then I save it. Then what I do is I replace the image with a solid white JPEG. The mat's already created. basically an image framer. You replace the image with a solid white JPEG that I've created, and I drop that in. So now I have the mat, and instead of the regular picture there, I have a solid white JPEG. The reason why I do that is because the next step is I'm going to print it out. And why waste ink on, you know, an image that you're just going to cut out anyway? That way, the only ink I'm using is the ink for the image framer mat itself. So then I print it out, and what I'm using for that is a nice, thick matte paper from Red River Paper. So I've been using the 96-pound polar mat for not only for my art pieces sometimes, because certain images look really nice on matte paper, but also when I make these mats. 96-pound polar mat, it works great. So then I print it out, and then I get a steel ruler. I have a steel ruler, and I get a box cutter, just a standard box cutter that uses a razor blade. Use a brand new blade when you're doing this. Don't use, if you've had the box cutter around and you've been opening boxes for 3 years, don't cut your mat with that, right? Break down and put a new blade in, or open it up where you can, you know, you can turn the blade around to the other side. Use a fresh blade. And the reason why you use a steel ruler is because that way, steel ruler, it'll stay put. You go right along the edge of the steel ruler. It's really nice. So a steel ruler and a box cutter. And then I cut out the inside. And I usually print two mats for every mat that I'm going to use, because I usually manage to screw one up. Not real bad, you know, just a little bit. But if I screw it up just a little bit, then I'll go ahead and cut the other one, and then I'll pick the best of the two. Now, these are the sort of things that obviously I'm noticing a lot more than the person that views the picture. So, you know, I'll notice the little things here and there. A lot of times I'll have a mat, and then I'll have a black inner mat, you know, a line that's inside. And the thing that you want to do is you just want to cut into the color. Whatever the color is, just cut into that color just ever so much. Don't cut just outside the color where you have a little white edge, because that'll drive you nuts. So cut just inside the color. Use a steel ruler and use a sharp blade. And just take your time. It only takes a couple minutes anyway. Just take your time. You have to do 4 cuts. So now you have your mat with the opening, and then you set it on top of the image. Now, it's going to work perfectly because you use that image to design the mat in the first place. Now all you got to do is get your 13-by-19-inch frame, drop down the print, put the mat on top of it. Everything fits perfectly. You don't have to fool around. Put the back on, hang it up. It looks great. I save my mats. I do, digitally. So, like, for instance, I have an illustration, a picture as an example for this Just One Print episode. So I have one of those saved. So that way, if I want to print it out again, if I want to make more prints or do any of that sort of stuff, then I can print the mat out again. If I want to change the color a little bit, I can do that, on and on and on. It's really kind of cool. So that is making a mat with ImageFramer. It's yet another use of this application. So I should mention we have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. You click on that, click on the ImageFramer tile. It goes over to our landing page on their site. Have all the information for you there. And then if you go ahead and buy ImageFramer, you get 20% off. And then I also want to mention that ImageFramer is on Facebook, facebook.com/ImageFramer. And there's all sorts of great ideas there too. But I have to tell you, I really dig doing this matte thing. And then I have an example that I'm going to run with the show notes. And it's actually a print. It's my Just One Print with a mat on it that I made from ImageFramer, and I'm looking at it, and actually that mat that I put on there was the first one, and then I decided to go ahead and cut a second one, and I used the second one. But you can see, like, sort of the whole process, and it's sitting there on my work table, and I haven't put the frame on it yet. I think the frame should be here in another day or so, but when the frame shows up, then I'm going to put it on there, and then I'm going to hang my Just One Print on the wall. So this is a lot of fun, and it's very satisfying. I've been really enjoying each step along the way. And there's something fun about just working on one image and not worrying about everything else. I really hope you give this a try. I have a Vanagon update for you. Yes, the VW Vanagon. So there's a whole domino effect here that I had to deal with. When the Vanagon had his problem back in San Francisco, when I was bringing my son's stuff up from college, when the Vanagon was full in a headwind, 105 degree day, going up hills, the whole deal. You heard the story earlier. You know, I ended up just getting it back to the house. I had it towed back to the house. But then I had all of Max's stuff in there, which means I couldn't get to the engine compartment or anything, because that's the way Vanagons are designed. The engine compartment is in the back, and it's under the platform there, where, of course, I had a bed and all this other stuff on top of it. So finally then, after I got back from Chicago and New Orleans, I was able to get Max moved, finish off the project. So what I did then was I rented another van, emptied out the van again into the other van, delivered it down to Santa Clara. So he's all set up now, and my van again is empty. So that means I was able to take a look at it. So I fired it up, and I did my preliminary work on it this weekend. I fired it up, and first of all, it sounds great. And I put it in gear, and I, you know, kind of drove back and forth a little bit, and it sounds pretty good. Sounds pretty good. The first thing that crosses my mind is that it's not totally broken, right? That's a good thing, because it's moving around, right? It has life. So the next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to check the transmission fluid, and that's kind of a little bit of a process on them. I do have to open up the engine compartment to do that, and the thing has to be heated up and all that, but I have the transmission fluid. I found it and I pulled it out. So I'm going to do that next and see if it's low on transmission fluid. Now, a good case scenario will be that I just pushed it too hard, maybe a little low on transmission fluid, and maybe it'll be fine other than don't do that again. However, I started reading about it, and boy, one thing when you own a Vanagon, one thing you never want to do is start reading about all the things that could go wrong. It's like when you take a biology course in college and you go, oh my God, I could die at any moment because all these very complicated things are happening at the same time. Reading about the Vanagon is sort of like that. And I guess that there is, for mine's a 1990, I guess there's a cooler that cools the transmission, but it's kind of an odd duck device. This is what you run into. And sometimes that cooler stops functioning properly. And then if it stops functioning properly, all sorts of really bad things can happen, including mixing of different coolants because of this weird, complicated way that it works. And you can't really get replacement parts for that particular item anymore, but someone makes a third party thing. It's a little bit like a Cuba situation here, where the parts are just like manufactured out of stuff. So I'm really hoping that cooler is for the transmission has not gone out, because if it does, then I'm looking at, I'm looking at a longer road. And that's where I'm going to leave you right now, too. You're in limbo and I'm in limbo. It's not terrible news. It's not great news. More to be revealed. New subjects added to the Nimble Classroom. So I talked about the Nimble Classroom last week. I launched the first class. Very excited about this. Just to refresh you in case you didn't listen last week, that I'm starting an online series called the Nimble Classroom. And the idea is that it's fun to travel for things like going to the mountains. It's fun to travel for coming to wine country in the fall. It's fun to travel for going to French Quarter, New Orleans. That's all worth traveling. But I was thinking that for software classes where we sit in a class most of the time, it's not as much fun to travel to sit in a classroom. Plus you have the expense. Not only do you have the tuition for the class itself, which is going to be more than what I'm doing with this Nimble Classroom, but then you also have the airfare, you have the hotel, you have restaurants, all that stuff. So what I wanted to do was to be able to teach these classes on Capture One Pro, on Photos for Mac OS, on Luminar. I want to be able to teach those, but I want to do it in a way that works for you better than you having to schlep all the way out here to sit in my studio and do it live. So I thought, what if I could do it live using the technology that's available? In other words, what if you could participate via your computer or smartphone or tablet device and not have to do all that traveling and do it for less than if you came out to a normal workshop? So that idea really appealed to me, and I started looking into the technology, and I found some really good software from my good friend Oliver called Mimo Live. And it basically is very sophisticated broadcast software that will run on my Mac that will allow me to move back and forth between the screen and live action, that will allow me to take calls from you on the show, right? You come right into the show and the other people can hear it. That will just allow this whole level of interaction that I was really looking for. And then on top of that, you know, what if you were able to submit the questions that you wanted up front, not only during the class itself, but up front? And I would actually work that into the curriculum. So that's the whole idea behind the Nimble Classroom. So what I did then is I got a good response to the first one, the catalog management, on August 19th. It's going to be the first one. So I've added three more, and we actually have a summer season now. And I think that's the way I'm going to do these. We'll do them by season. So we'll do the summer season first, and then we'll do a winter season, and then possibly a spring season, that kind of thing. And there'll probably be four or five classes in each season. So the four classes that we have for summer, on August 19th, is going to be catalog management for Capture One Pro. Everything you need to know about setting up your Capture One Pro environment to manage your images. September 9th, we're going to do expert editing with Capture One Pro. So then we get into actually using all those tools in Capture One Pro to make our images look great. On September 23rd, we're going to do Luminar Pro Techniques. And about that time, I think the Windows version for Luminar should be out also, so, or very close to it. I'm already working with a public beta. So this one will be good for Mac and Windows users, as will Capture One Pro, which also runs on Mac and Windows. So Capture One Pro and Luminar, those will be good regardless of the platform that you have. And then on October 7th, we're going to do Photos 3 for Mac OS, because about that time, Apple should be ready to release Photos 3 right in there somewhere. It comes out with Mac OS High Sierra. They redesigned it. There's a lot of stuff going on with it. And it really gives me the opportunity not only to teach you best practices for photos, but also for all the editing extensions and the whole ecosystem, iCloud, everything that's involved with it. So those are the four classes. All you have to do is go to thenimblephotographer.com, thenimblephotographer.com, and then you'll see Classroom right up there in the nav bar. Just click on that, and all of these classes will be there. And the subsequent classes that we do for the upcoming seasons will be there also when we publish that season. But right now we have these four that I'm talking about. You can learn more about them. You can sign up for them. And then there's a contact form right there. That's also in the nav bar. You have a question, use the contact form, send it to me, and I'll get back to you. This is going to be really cool. And the classes run either $99 or $129. And then that's it. Limited to 6 participants. We're going to keep it like a real class. So that is the Nimble Classroom. 4 sessions now. Pretty excited about it. Hope to see you in class, right? All right, let's wrap up here. And I want to start out by thanking our Patreon members. We have some new members this week. Welcome to the Inner Circle, new members. You know who you are. And thank you for helping to support the show and to keep the lights on for everyone. I truly appreciate it. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper. We're working on a number of things right now. A lot of it are around the creative printing book that I worked on. And we're talking about how we can use that content and share it with people. I'm still getting letters from out of Chicago, people sending me their projects that they've done, the square prints and the square greeting cards, which I'm just so happy. There was a note today that came my way. Someone was very excited about what we talked about in class. All of this made possible by Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story and a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, that is going to do it for me today. just one print. Try it. Whether you print it yourself or you send out for it, do the whole thing, get it up on the wall, and then if you want to share how you feel afterwards with me, I am all ears. I would love to hear it. I hope you do this. I think it's very exciting, and it adds a whole nother dimension to us as artists and photographers. Working on more stories for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a fantastic week. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.